Miriam Meets on RTE Radio 1 with Miriam O'Callaghan.
My guests this morning are a brother and sister. After leaving school, Cian O'Connor took a year out before going to university to see if he could make it as a show jumper. He never went back to university and he has certainly made his mark in show jumping, and this summer he won a bronze medal at the Olympics in London. But it would be fair to say his career has had its share of controversy. His little sister is Pippa. She's a model and television presenter and is married to Brian Orman, the TV presenter, and she's just announced that they are expecting their first child. You're both very welcome. Congratulations to you, Pippa.
Thank you very much, Miriam.
How pregnant are you?
I am 14 weeks.
That's exciting. A little bit pregnant.
A little bit.
I used to always think 14 weeks was good. You're kind of over the dangerous period. That's great.
Please,
I'm
God.
Delighted.
So, yeah, we're very happy and excited and looking forward to it.
Yeah, no, it's great. You're going to be an uncle.
Yeah, it'll be great. Well, our older sister, Susanna, has a little boy already, Finn. He's just over a year, so get to spend some time with him. But it'll be lovely to have a little companion.
You'll have to get started now yourself, Cian.
Yeah, still plenty of work to do.
Okay, so where did you come in the family? You're not the eldest, Cian.
No,
tell me about your family.
Yeah, Susanna is 2 years older than me. And Pippa's 5 years younger, so I'm in the middle.
And what was she like as a little girl?
What was she like? I suppose she's very different than she is now. People wouldn't believe she was a little tomboy. She's going to kill me for saying this. Short hair and come everywhere with me, out riding the horses.
Of course I was a tomboy. I grew up with Cian and he just tried to make me into a little boy, I think. He's trying to toughen me up. I think he was annoyed he didn't have a brother.
Probably
he
was.
Pretending I was a brother. I think it's fair to say Cian was very tough on me and always tried to kind of make me kind of harder.
Probably. It didn't do you any harm anyway in the long run.
No.
But you were an altar boy, Cian, is this correct?
That's right, I was. I did my fair share of services to the church in Nace. I really enjoyed it, actually. But in those days, I don't know how it is now, but the altar boys in a big parish like that used to get a little bit of money. And we used to get paid for our services on a Sunday. So we'd go down there and work, collect all the baskets and do basic work in the sacristy. And it was deemed a good job at the time.
And how much would you get? And who would pay you?
I think the sacristan used to pay us, or the parish priest. It was maybe a pound a mass.
Not bad.
Not bad. And extras for weddings and funerals.
I never knew there was money in it. But he was an entrepreneur from a young age. Is it true he used to kind of take daffodils out of your grandparents' garden and sell them?
Best describe Cian as, a little entrepreneur, much older than his years and a little bit bold. He never did anything like illegal, but our grandparents had a beautiful big garden and a quarry full of daffodils, like thousands. And Cian would go and put a dent in them and go around selling them to the neighbours and make a few bob.
I have to say I had a really good primary school teacher in Christian Brothers in Nace, Michael McCarthy, and he always taught us other things outside of the classroom. I mean, from gardening and cooking, and he was really into conquer cancer. And actually, the daffodils were for him to be able to sell on Daffodil Day. But he used to ask the class to do it, and anything I would do, I tend to put my mind to it. And I can promise I wasn't siphoning the funds. But the other boys would bring in a box of daffodils, and I brought in a field full. Or we used to sell lines for the blind, and somebody would sell 5 or 6 lines, and I'd sell 20 cards. This kind of thing. So I like to go the extra mile.
He always does everything to the extreme.
And Pippa, you had a party piece, didn't you? Annie Umbrella.
Oh, Cian has just reminded me of this this morning. Yes, I did. I always thought myself as a singer and a performer, but I was really bad at the singing. So I think that's why Cian finds it so funny that I used to try and sing.
Every week at my grandparents, or every time there was a big dinner, they would say, oh, Pippa, you're going to do a party piece. And she'd get up like a fool. She'd get up on top of a chair and sing this song. She had one or two others.
I wish I had the confidence I had then that I do now. You know that?
What way did it go?
Oh, Miriam, I can't even remember. Can you?
No. Best leave that one.
And your parents split up when you were young, I know, but you remain close to both of them, don't you?
Yeah, very much.
Yeah, I thought it was good fun at the time. I mean, I was maybe 7, Pippa was 2, and I explained to Pippa it was going to be fine to get 2 presents for Christmas. So it was no hassle. We never saw it as a problem, and
we remained very
close to both our parents.
I think they were both good in the sense that they didn't make it an issue. There was no crosswords. I don't remember anything ever, being bad said.
At each other.
We knew no different. And because I was so young, I suppose I just thought that that's the way it was. And to me, we had a great childhood and the best of everything. We were very lucky.
And you had great grandparents on both sides, but you were particularly close to your mum's parents.
That's right, yeah, Carl and Doreen.
Tell people about Carl and Doreen Mullen.
Yeah, Carl was very famous. He was a very good rugby player, obviously, captained the Irish team for many years and the British Lions. Captain of the Irish team the last time they won the Triple Crown and the Grand Slam. And no, they were amazing, a great influence on us, and just wonderful people. He was very well known, especially in Dublin. He was a gynaecologist then in his profession, and just a true gentleman, a very nice person. Everyone who touched him or who would have come across him would have had that opinion.
Looking at photographs of him, you look very like him. Does anyone ever say that?
People say that sometimes. Yeah, I have some. I have some pictures of him when he was younger. I have one picture in my office of him signing a ball on a tour to New Zealand, and he looks a little bit like me.
Yeah. No pressure then to be a rugby player.
There was a little bit. I mean, I was actually in Belvedere College yesterday, where I went to school, as did Carl, and I was talking to the pupils there, and I spoke about rugby, and obviously it's a major rugby school. So when I said I wanted to change and pursue maybe an interest in horses, it was a bit like saying you wanted to change religion. But to be fair to them, they supported me and there was no hassle.
And your godfather, of course, was Carl Mullins. One of his best friends, Tony O'Reilly, isn't he?
That's right, yeah. Tony was very close to Carl and Doreen and have a great family relationship.
And where did you get your love of performing when you were young? Your grandmother, Doreen, she was a performer in her own right, wasn't she?
Yeah, I think we called Doreen Dodo, so if I refer to her as Dodo, you'll know what I mean. Yeah, Dodo was definitely a performer, and she was always singing. She sang professionally when she was young, didn't she, Cian?
Yeah, musicals and plays.
She would have been well known,
kind of,
I think, around Dublin, and she was just constantly teaching us how to sing, and she was always dancing, and she had a great big piano in her home, and she used to always try and teach me how to play the piano, and now I really regret.
You were crap at the piano. I was
Cian, you're portraying I was crap at everything.
No, but I remember getting onto you and actually falling out with you over the piano.
Yeah, I know.
Why was she really, really bad?
Well, I didn't really take it seriously, and poor Dodo used to put so much effort and time into trying to teach me how to play, and I really, that's one of my biggest regrets now, is not listening and taking it up, because I think it's such an amazing talent.
But you could take
have.
It up again now in I her could. Memory.
Yeah, I could. That is definitely, I think, where I got all that from. It was definitely her. She was the performer in the family.
She was very good to all of us. How many grandchildren had you? 19?
19 yeah. grandchildren. She was.
I heard, though, that she spoiled you, Cian, that she had a big soft spot for you, and she was quite tough. Not tough on you, Pippa.
I'm going to answer this.
Well, they say that I was a favourite, but I mean...
She used to say it outright.
But the only way that they could think that was because one day we were all having dinner, everyone was getting beef stew and I got fillet steak. And for some reason, they jumped to that conclusion.
She would say, I don't mind. I'm going to say it. Kula, she'd call him, is my favourite.
That's so in front of everyone.
Yeah, yeah. Fall out with everyone else.
When did they both die? Not that long ago.
Not that long ago, no. My grandmother passed away first.
Yeah.
And Carl, a year later, almost to the day. So it's 4 years now.
4 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did you find that a big loss, Cian?
It was, yeah. I remember... when Carl was dying, I remember the last few days, and it was sad. He was in the bed, and he hadn't moved for quite some time, and I had been away, and his other daughters were there, as well as my mum, Gay and Anna. Anna was very good; she really took care of them. And I can remember when I came in, because I hadn't been coming in, it was the first time he moved, and he clenched my hands. They were all excited, but I don't think it was because it was me, probably because it was somebody different. But it was like he recognised and he moved again, so that was nice.
Oh, no, he probably did recognise it was you. I mean, I think it's a beautiful relationship. It's a really special one.
I think now that I'm that bit older, now that I'm married, and I suppose maybe because I'm expecting my first child, I think now appreciate... how much they did for us, and you know, just how much of an influence they were, and yeah, we were just so lucky. They were extremely special to us. So I think, and it was kind of funny. We all kept saying to each other when they passed away, you know, we shouldn't really be sad and look at the life they've had, and it's not like they're young, and so we tried to be, you know, upbeat and as positive as we could about it. You know, they had the most wonderful life. I suppose we were just sad for ourselves.
And also, your mum had a bad car crash, hadn't she, when you were very young? And you actually lived with your grandpa.
Yeah, we always lived close to them. We lived in Johnstown Village, just outside Naas. And Dodo and Carl lived just up the road from us in Johnstown also, and our mum had a bad car crash, and I was probably about 8, I think. So she spent a good few months in hospital. So I think I moved in there pretty much full time, and you know, so they were like second parents to us. So yeah, I suppose that's why it kind of felt like they weren't just your granny and granddad passing away. Obviously, that's sad as it is, but I think that it just felt like that bit more to us.
Did you think this year when you won your bronze medal, did you think of Carl?
Yeah, definitely.
I thought you
He would have been very proud, yeah.
Very proud. We're going to take the first piece of music, which is John McCormack.
Go ahead.
John McCormack was a big favourite of Carl's, and in his last days he was really adamant that they keep playing this song, so I think it's very nice to hear it again.
John McCormack there, beautiful voice with that beautiful song, I Hear You Calling Me. Before I called in that song, actually, Cian, I had said to you, did you think of your granddad, Carmon, who'd been so good to you when you won your bronze this summer? And you got emotional saying you did.
Yeah, it's funny. I suppose we're reminiscing, so you're thinking back in time, and I suppose you're you know, wondering what would have been if they were here and so on. But I think my grandfather was a great believer in he used to have a great saying that success is reward for effort. And he always said, you'll do okay when you're a worker. So I think he would have said, I'm not surprised.
And you were actually a late comer to horses, weren't you? Like, you weren't riding from the age of one or something.
No, sure. I suppose reasonably late. And my father was hunting tig, and he had a hunting horse down in Bettystown, County Meath. And I started riding down there when I was about 14. Got going there with John Floody, who's still a good friend of mine today, and just kind of learned across the fields and out on the beach, and quickly kind of realised that I liked the competitive side of things. And there used to be hunter trial competitions at the end of the hunting season, and we took part in a few of them and did quite well. And then gradually I got into show jumping and realised, I suppose, that I was taken by the whole thing and I have the bug.
And when did you realise you could do it? Almost for your living.
When I did my leaving cert in Belvedere, I said to my mum that I wanted to take a year out, and through a friend of mine, Jerry Mullins, I had found a contact in Maynooth at Copper Alley Stud, and I took a few stables there and started to keep my dad's horse there and some other horses, and just gradually started very small and got into it. And I had quite an interest in law when I was going to school, and must have spoken about it with my parents about maybe going to college, and I said, convince my mum that I'll just take a year out and try my hand at the horses, and we actually never discussed it anymore.
You started horse riding too, didn't you, Pippa, at one stage?
Yeah, we all started at that time that Cian spoke about in Bettystown.
Even before that, I have memories of going down to Pat Kavanagh's in Blessington when we were a bit younger, and I remember Susanna was way better than me.
Yeah, well, that wouldn't be hard. Cian was like a big sack of spuds when he started. He wasn't at all graceful or elegant on a horse. He definitely didn't have a natural flair. I suppose the older I got, I just got into different things, and I was more into going to the Gaiety School of Acting, and as well, I think Cian definitely played a role in me not wanting to do it anymore.
Think so?
Yeah, he was mean. He was way too tough. He used to tell me to go faster and jump higher, and you know, he put the fear of God into me, basically. And I think one day I just said, I'm not doing it anymore.
Oh, I'm sorry for that. That's why I don't help my wife.
Yeah.
So you have to accept responsibility for putting her off it now.
Maybe it's good that she doesn't do it.
He was way too tough. I feel sorry for anyone he trains.
Explain what puissance is. Well, for people who aren't into horses, that's a big part of what you started doing and still do, wasn't it?
Yeah, puissance is probably not as popular now as it was. Puissance is the high wall. It's the red wall. People will be familiar with it in the RDS. It's very easy to follow. You either jump it or you crash.
How high can it be?
It can go, the record in the RDS is 2 metres 27, which I think is 7 foot 4 3/4. And myself and David O'Brien and John Whittaker hold that record now. One time in Dublin, I went for 2.31. I just knocked the top brick. So you need a brave horse. And it's all about trust, that the horse understands that you're not going to lie to him or put him in a bad position. And that's kind of special bond between the animal.
And the rider has to be a bit mad.
The rider has to be a bit mad. Well, you don't really think about it. Your blood is up when there's a big crowd there. But you wouldn't jump 7 foot at home, for instance. You know, it's only in the show that you kind of get yourself warmed up and revved up to do it.
So you wouldn't necessarily practice on a 7 foot when you're...
No.
No, well,
no,
that's
normally
interesting.
Not. Yeah, I suppose because the adrenaline of the whole occasion and everything else, you'd maybe get a horse familiar to the idea of jumping a red wall, but you'd never go as big at home.
And would you be nervous now before you jump something that high?
I suppose a little bit of nerves is a good thing. I love performing, and that's how I see show jumping a little bit. Quite often when it's not that an important event, sometimes I don't get myself as focused or as motivated as I should. And when it's really important and there's a lot of pressure and there's people there, I tend to do a little bit better.
You perform well, I think, when you're under most pressure. I think that's apparent from the Olympics this year.
Yeah.
I think where most people, me anyway, I'd crumble. But Kian's very good under pressure.
When it's important, you know everyone is there and they want you to do well, and there's a lot at stake, so that's the time to dig deep.
Do you ever worry about him, Pippa, when you watch him?
Not worry about him, but I suppose you're willing him so much to do so well. You just, you know, we know the effort that goes into it. So it's just, as Kian said, it can be the time of less than a second that might lose something, or the just little knock of a jump that can make all those hours work, not count or count. So we just are always, you know, have our fingers and legs and everything crossed for him. You know, we just always want him to do well.
Have you ever injured yourself?
No, touch wood. It's not that dangerous. Mm. I mean, we don't really take on really young horses that could be wild. Most of the horses where I'd be jumping are experienced. You know, we don't take unnecessary chances.
What was the first big competition you went into?
I suppose at different levels, everything is big. You know, when you're starting, the first international major one would have been the Junior European Championships in Belgium in 1997. I was 17. And a lot of the other junior kids would have been very experienced, and you know, were kind of names in the sport, and I came along and kind of semi unheard of. I've been very lucky. I mean, Jerry Mullins has been a great friend and mentor to me. He was a lieutenant colonel in the Irish Army in the Equitation School and very successful himself. And he's been a great friend throughout. And Jerry brought me to the Europeans, and he helped me along. And at the start of the week, some of the parents of the other kids were calling me Kieran and didn't know my name and this kind of thing. At the end of the week, they knew who I was. I won the Grand Prix and I finished fifth individually. So it was good.
And then he'd come home and make me watch it with him 100 times on video and say, now watch this. Now coming up, and he's saying, see what I did there?
So the analysis is always important.
That's how I got taught everything from Kieran. He used to come home and analyse everything with us.
Do you think you need to be quite privileged to get on in the career you do? I mean, in other words, show jumping, it's associated, or it's probably incorrectly associated with privilege, and also the notion that because Tony O'Reilly was your godfather, that in some way you got a lot more than others, and that's why it helped you do so well.
Sure. Well, there's a couple of questions. I suppose the first thing is it is perceived as elitist, and it's hard to get away from that. I mean, it's not as accessible as going out and kicking a football or whatever, but it is possible. I mean, if you look at even the English team this year, a guy called Scott Brash came from Pebbles in Scotland, and he won a gold medal on the English team through working hard and getting a sponsor. Dermot Lennon in Ireland won the World Championships in 2002. Again, a guy in his neighbourhood bred a horse. So it is possible to come ahead. I would say, you know, more important than money and raw talent, I suppose, is hard work, commitment, dedication, going the extra mile and not giving up. And I think they're all attributes of anybody that's successful. And obviously, I was very fortunate through Tony to have that leg up in my formative years, which probably fast-tracked my career with the supply of good horses. But in terms of business and in terms of, you know, buying my first truck or renting my stables, they were all things that I had to self-generate from buying and selling horses, coaching and getting some sponsorship and basically wheeling and dealing to stay above water.
I mean, probably also because you react against people thinking, oh, it was only because of Tony O'Reilly you do well. You probably do want to do a lot on your own.
Yeah, you'd have that yourself, Miriam. You learn to knock out the begrudgers. I mean, there's plenty of them in life, and if they're not talking about you, you're not doing well. So I wouldn't you know, have too much pass on what people say like that. If you look at other sports, whether it's racing or Formula One, people can't do it. I mean, Johnny Murtagh can't win the champion race on a donkey. So somebody has to supply those. But for some reason, this sport, it seems to be almost a negative if you have that help. Mm. But I don't worry about that.
Were you in London this year for the Olympics, Pippa, when he won his medal? Tell me about that.
As you know, London was such a big deal. It just seemed like everyone wanted to be at the Olympics. So thankfully we got tickets, and I remember I was busy working. So I got there on the third day of Kian qualifying. So I said to him, you know, will you qualify? Will you get into the final? He said, yeah, it should be no problem. You know, Kian doesn't give too much away. He's pretty cool and collective. And I took that as, you know, he'll be in. And we were being positive anyway. So I remember just getting off the flight, and I was keeping up to date on everything through my phone. And only 35 were going through to the final on the Wednesday. This was Monday. And I looked, and he was in 29th position, and then he was in 30th, and he just kind of kept getting closer to 35, and it was nearly towards the end. I think then I got word, Kian's wife Ruth texted me and said he's not in. Did you come 36th?
Yeah, equal 36th. There was 36. Three of us on
so he was one. He was one place short. I was in the taxi with Brian. We were on the way to the hotel or whatever, and I just started to cry. And he was like, why are you so upset? You know, we're here anyway, and we're going to go to the Olympics, and it's going to be amazing. So I'm just so upset for Kian. You know, he's come all this way, and now he's not in the final. I was absolutely devastated.
But the interesting thing is, first of all, I want you to tell me briefly the history of how you got in the first place, because that's when somebody else had to drop out. But then you actually took your riding gear, didn't you, that morning?
Yeah.
Even though you were 36.
Yeah, well, you've got to be prepared for all eventualities. But just to go back a step, just to touch back on the horses, and our sport is very much about having horsepower. And last winter I was having dinner with some friends of mine, Charlie and Barbara O'Reilly Highland, and we were discussing about going to the Olympics. And Charlie said it would be great to go back, you know, following Athens and everything. It would be nice to go back to another Olympic Games. What about aiming for Rio? And I said, what about London? And he said, what do you mean? I said, well, we had to buy the horse until before the 31st of December 2011 for it to be eligible. So he said, do you think that's possible? I said, I'll go have a look. There's one horse that I like. So I saw this horse in Norway and I liked him, and we set about to buy the horse, and Charlie supported me. So it's amazing really to think back to then and how we've come through. And so then I made a plan, what shows I wanted to go to. I went to Florida for 3 months to get the hang of the horse because it was similar conditions to what we'd have in London, a similar terrain, ground, fences. And I thought that was the best place. I went there. Then I came back home, was on the Irish team 6 times during the year, again, to get used to the horse. But just to give you the background of it, Ireland had only 2 individual places, and those places were won by Billy Toomey and Dennis Lynch. But they actually weren't won for themselves, they're won for the country, and the country could give them out how they saw fit. And the man who had the job of that was our chef to keep, Robert Splane. And he gave the places to Dennis Lynch and to Billy Toomey. Dennis Lynch then had a problem with his horse in Aachen, and he was called into a meeting of a monitoring group of Horseport Ireland. And it was decided then at that stage that his entry would be withdrawn. And then it was back to Robert Splane to decide who he would pick, and he had a couple of choices to make. And there would have been some people who would have preferred him not to pick me, because they probably would have felt it was controversial publicly and everything. And he stood up to that, and he did what he felt was right. So to that, I owe him a great deal.
When did you hear that he'd picked you at that moment?
Yeah, I think it was a couple of days after Aachen. And then it was ratified by the Olympic Council of Ireland, because they would have the final say of any selection that comes through from Horseport Ireland. And so I knew we were making a plan to go to London. We had 3 weeks, but it wasn't like I was kind of going a different track and then, you know, diverted to London. We bought the horse for London. We were preparing for London. You know, the way I said it at the time was pieces of the jigsaw fell into place a little bit late, where some people said, God, this guy wasn't even going, and next thing he was just thrown in there. In my mind, I was always going. That's why we bought the horse.
But that must have meant a lot to you then when he did pick you, that man Robert Splane.
That was huge.
Yeah.
I mean, the Olympics, I suppose, is the ultimate in every sport, and to have the opportunity to go on a horse that I felt could deliver. And the reason why I was so confident was because Aachen is probably the biggest show in the world. And couple of weeks previously, the horse had jumped a clear round there to help the Irish team finish third. So it was really just coming right at the right time. And like I said, it's all about trust, and a partnership takes time to develop. And sometimes with a horse, it could take a year or a year and a half. And by the Olympics, I had Blue Lloyd 8 months. So it was just coming right. And it all came right on the weekend, you know.
But then you get there, and as Pippa said, she starts to cry because you're just missing the final because you're in a 36th joint place instead of 35th. So how did you end up getting in?
Yeah.
And why did you bring your clothes that morning, even though you weren't meant to be in the final?
Blue Lloyd had jumped well. He had jumped well all week. Because it was the biggest we'd ever jumped, many of the horses that would be there, as I said, the partnerships would have been more established. And in the last qualifying round, I probably put too much pressure because these are the biggest fences and the horse can sense everything. And I was probably squeezing him more than normal. And he got a little bit quick over his fences and he had a couple of fences down. So I was one place out. But, you know, at that level and all the stress on all those other horses, I thought maybe one of them is going to go out. So there was a veterinary inspection 2 hours before the final. And the night before, I was having dinner with Jerry Mullins and he says, yeah, you know, you have a chance, we'll see. And we normally exercise the horses in the morning. And I said, well, we exercise after the veterinary inspection because, you know, if we don't get in, there's no point really in putting him through the exercise. Jerry says, no, we'll come down at 7 o'clock. We'll give him proper exercise as if we're jumping, plan to jump. And I said, okay.
Good man, Jerry.
Pack the whites. I was leaving the apartment that morning. Ruth says, what are you doing? I said, I'm just packing my shirt. She just said, you're having a laugh. I said, no, we're going to be jumping.
Ever the optimist.
Went down, worked the horse. He worked well. And then the veterinary inspection of all the horses. My horse was on springs. He trotted up absolutely really well. So that was a good start. And then we'd sit agonily and watch the other horses being inspected. And some of them were stopped and asked to go a second time. So you're kind of hoping, watching that the vets, unfortunately, might spin one of them. And then the last horse was a Swedish horse and he wasn't right. And the vet said no.
The last horse. Yeah. Like, what are the chances? Yeah.
That must have been your grandfather, Carl, praying somewhere.
It was fate or something, I don't know.
And then I see you have that beautiful bronze Olympic medal beside you. Let me see it.
Yeah, sure.
How sweet was it for you to win this medal?
Sure, it was amazing. I mean, obviously I get the kudos, but there's so many people. I mean, you wouldn't have time to mention them all who've helped me and have put so much work in behind the scenes. A lot of blood, sweat and tears have gone into making that happen.
And for you, Pippa, was it extra sweet because of what happened in Athens?
Absolutely. I think to us it didn't matter whether he got gold, silver or bronze. It was just a medal, and to see him on that podium again, it was just amazing. And you know, it just goes to show that you never give up. It's just such a lesson to everyone in no matter what you're doing in life, just to pursue and never take no for an answer and just keep going.
Do you understand, I suppose, for some people though, going back to Athens 2004, and some people might even remember, but people in the know will remember that you won the gold, didn't you? And then it was subsequently taken off you because your horse was found to have...
He had traces of a medication that he had got a couple of, actually over a month before, for a genuine treatment. And I was very fortunate in that situation because the governing body, the FEI, cleared me of any deliberate wrongdoing, and a panel of experts sat and adjudicated on the matter, and they found that, unfortunately, the rules were zero. We were outside of zero. And we had to give the medal back. But yeah, it was tough to take at the time. I mean, there's no point saying otherwise. It wasn't simple. And you know, I never said that we didn't make mistakes, but we've moved on and you know, competed all over the world on the Irish team, on the Aga Khan, won the Nations Cup in Aachen, jumped double clear there. So a lot of things have happened since. It was funny for me to listen to some of the reports because, like, oh, Kian O'Connor's going to the Olympics, as if I kind of hopped out of a coffin or something, that, you know, that I hadn't been doing anything for the last 8 years. Because I suppose that's a bit with show jumping. It only kind of comes into people's mind maybe for the Dublin Horse Show and for the Olympics. And for us, we're at this week in, week out. So it's something I've kind of put my head down and worked hard for 8 years. And as I said, with a lot of support, I mean, I don't know, is Ireland, Ireland's a great country in a way, you know, to back success and all things Irish. Sometimes we're quick to talk about us knocking each other, but there is a great sense of the, you know, the green, white and gold and back a winner, because so many people came on board to help me actually as owners and in various ways of support and prolific people after Athens. And so that was a sign to me. It wasn't like that I was kind of pushed aside. More people said, let's get behind this man. Michael Smurf had bought a horse that we called K Club Lady, and she was on the winning team in Aachen, and she jumped the Nations Cup in Dublin. The O'Reilly Highlands came in and we bought Blue Lloyd. And many of my sponsors, Horseware Ireland and Gain Horse Feeds, many people upped the ante to help Gian O'Connor get back there. So it's really nice for all of them.
And did you feel in 2004 that, I suppose, you hadn't just let the Irish people down? Because I suppose it's about trust, is it? And that there's so many scandals, even to do with cycling and doping, and the notion that whether, as you say, they found in your favour to the extent that you didn't deliberately put anything into this horse. But at the end of the day, it's just this whole feeling that drugs, doping, sport, and that it's a break of trust, really, isn't it, between you and the public?
Yeah, it leaves, and there's no point saying otherwise. It leaves some kind of question mark and things hanging in the air. But you know, the amount of coverage and the amount of negative publicity that I got at the time was very difficult to take. But
how did you deal with them?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, I've actually, the hardest time for me was when it was all over, because when it was all going on, I was, you know, dodging the bullets and fighting the war and on this interview and that interview and reading that paper. And I'm very hands-on with that kind of stuff. And the adrenaline of it all keeping going and following the aftermath of it, when I had to hand back the medal, everything went quiet. And that was hard when there was no buzz going on anymore, you know, to deal with that. And I stayed at home for 3 months, and I won the National League here. And then the week after my 3 month suspension was over, I was straight back on the team in Hickstead and Dublin. So then there was negativity surrounding that, but I didn't get involved. I put my head down and just fought on. And many of my detractors are still, you know, struggling away, and I keep fighting. You know, I kind of feel, you know, that amongst us, my family, people that really support me, we're happy. And when you're comfortable in your own skin, Miriam, I suppose that's what matters.
Oh, man. Do you remember that time in 2004?
Yes, very well. I was actually working for Kian at the time. Don't laugh, as his PA.
Oh, you were very good. Oh, no.
Well, I was Kian's PA just after Athens, because all of a sudden he was, you know, really busy and had an enormous workload. So I was, you know, 20, I think. So I was still kind of not knowing what I wanted to do. I was a bit, at that stage of your life, in between things. So Kian kindly gave me a job and I moved in with him and literally worked for him in his home, in his office. So I was there in the middle of it when it all came about and he had to give the medal back. And it was an awful time. I think it's fair to say Kian coped the best out of everyone, I think. He was very, to me, very together and very, okay, let's sort this out, let's deal with it and let's move on. He was very collected.
How do you give a gold medal? Like, I'm holding your bronze medal at the moment.
Simple
I better
enough,
give it back to you, actually.
It's simple enough.
But you how do you give back the gold? Do you post it back?
You get a phone call and I had to go in and meet the Secretary General at the time in the Federation. Was a guy called Dan Butler, very nice man, actually. And he said, unfortunately, I have to give this back. In hindsight, I maybe should have made a replica. and giving them that back.
People in your own life, for instance, like, I suppose, Carl Mullen, your grandfather, and maybe Tony O'Reilly, who'd been very good. Did you find it difficult at the time? Did you feel very guilty at that time that this had happened?
No, I mean, the two people you mentioned were so supportive in regards to Tony. I can remember meeting him and him saying to me at the time, this is only going to be a hiccup in what's going to be a long and distinguished career. And you know, never at any stage questioned why or where. So supportive more what he didn't say than what he said. And that's why those guys are solid people.
Waterford Crystal was the horse in Athens, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Where is that horse now?
Waterford is actually on a farm. He's retired and he's looking after some race horses and as a companion.
Do you love horses?
You do get very attached. I suppose it's hard for me because my main part of the business is buying and selling. If the right customer came along, say, for Blue Lloyd at the moment, he could be sold. And that is very hard because you do get attached to them. But as well as a sport, this is a business. And if I want to survive, that's the way I have to look at it.
And we're going to take the next piece of music, which you like, Kian, which is the script.
Yeah, Hall of Fame. It's a very nice song. And maybe it depicts something about all of us. It's about success. Have a listen.
The script there with Hall of Fame. You love that song, don't you, Keane?
Yeah, it's a nice song. I suppose it has a nice ring to it, but also for me, I suppose there's nice justification when I look at the medal and I think, you know, how my career has gone. I suppose the 10 years working to Athens and then the 8 years going from Athens back to London, and you know, it's a very, very happy memory.
Pippa, you're on Celebrity Bonus Tour tonight, of course.
Yes, I am. You'll see me fighting in the battle to win the semi-final tonight. It has been a good experience, a very different experience for me. I have been involved in other things like beauty shows and cooking shows, so to go in and try and manage a team of lads has been a challenge, but really enjoyable, good fun. The best part was beating my husband in round one.
It's a really popular programme, actually. It's got like big audiences.
It is very popular, and I suppose I can see how it is. It's an Irish show. It's our own format. And everyone loves Gaelic. There's good rivalry and great crack amongst all the Bonish doors. So it's good fun to tune into.
As siblings, though, you got married, both of you, relatively recently.
Yeah.
But you're very private, Cian. And you had a TV crew at your wedding, Pippa. Is that right?
Yes. I think it's safe to say we're all very different. Myself and my siblings are very different. That would be Cian's worst nightmare, I think, to film his wedding.
I don't think anyone would be interested.
Put it on TV. You'd be surprised. But yeah, it was something that I was approached about 8 months before we'd planned to get married. And I kind of thought, oh, that would be a great idea. And I love weddings, and what girl wouldn't want to watch that? And so I kind of went back half laughing, saying to Brian, you'll never guess, but, and he laughed in my face and said, there's no way, have you lost the plot? You cannot put our wedding on TV. And, you know, that would mean our families are involved, and it's just too much, it's too personal. So I talked him around, and I assured him that we wouldn't involve any of our family. It would just be about us and the planning, and no one would be involved if they didn't want to. And we did it with the understanding that we would have full control of what went into it. And I'm really proud of it now when I watch it. It was just a nice thing to do. It's very fun. It's probably more for the girls. It just showed us planning our wedding and the ups and downs and that we all go through, and the fights I had with Brian about spending too much money and the excitement of getting your dress. And it was just, I think it was really nice. I'm really proud of it.
And what about, there's always criticism, but I suppose what about the notion that people get their weddings filmed and it's the cult of celebrity, and what is celebrity, and wouldn't you want everything to be private because it's
love? Do you know
what?
Like, look at the times we're in, and I hate saying, oh, we're in a recession, but there's so much doom and gloom, and I just took it as a big compliment for RTE to say, you know what, I think a lot of people will be interested in watching that. And you don't get many offers like that these days. So I just took it and ran with it, and it got a great reaction. And I'm really glad that we did it.
Did you hide from the camera on the day, Cian?
No, we were there in the background. No, it was great. It was a fantastic wedding. You know, as Pippa says, in these times, to get a chance like that is great, you know.
And you got married as well to your wife when? On New Year's Eve?
Yeah, Ruth Mabin. She's from Ballymena originally, and we met through the horses, and we got married on New Year's Eve. So, yeah, it's fantastic, and it's great, really, especially in my world, to have someone there, because the good days are great, but there's a lot of ups and downs with horses, and it's great that Ruth has such an interest.
I think Ruth deserves that medal more than you.
Probably.
And it's great though, she's interested.
You'd have to be really, like, last week we went to a competition in Eglinton in Derry, and it was cold, and we were there until like 12:30 at night. And so you really need to be enthusiastic. I won the Grand Prix, so it was some consolation. But she slept the whole way home, and I drove. So, but it's great to have a partner who has an interest. Otherwise, it would be very difficult.
Where do you run your? Is it a stables, a horse business? Now, where do you run it from, Cian?
Yeah, at the moment I'm stabled at Waterside Stud. It's just between Ashburn and Slane, and basically I keep my own horses there. I produce them. I go to competitions. I have another rider who also rides for me. So even when I'm abroad competing, the younger horses are produced at home. And it's all about balancing the different facets of the business or competing internationally, which I suppose gives me a shop window in which other people want to come and train, come and learn from me, or indeed buy a horse of mine. So it's really the competing is the it gets you out on the world stage and gets you well known, and from that the other parts of your business come through. Some of the riders have a top sponsor and they can concentrate on riding. And in the absence of that, you have to balance the books, so you have to keep all the balls in the air.
I suppose everything's been affected by the recession. Has your business been affected by it too?
I suppose a low end would have been, I mean, it's hard to sell an average horse, but then the really good one, it's a bit like everything, it still holds its value. And at the top end of show jumping, there's many emerging markets, such as the Saudi Arabians, who won team bronze at the London Games. I've done some business with them. The Ukrainian team also had a horse at the Olympics from myself. So it's all about looking further afield and not solely relying on home.
I heard actually someone praising the other day saying you'd stayed in Ireland, and an awful lot of people in your trade haven't stayed in Ireland. They've left Ireland. Have you always planned to stay here?
Yeah, I could see why other people went away. Every time you want to go to a show here, we're going to France now, you have to cross the sea, and then another time. And obviously, if you're based in Germany or Holland, you only have a couple of hours to drive to your shows. But I've made a conscious decision because I like it here. I'm a bit of a home bird. Myself and Ruth hope to buy our own house quite shortly and build an equestrian facility there, and maybe have some kind of a centre of excellence here in Ireland where other people could come and learn about all things equestrian. I mean, there's great tradition with the Irish horse, and the Irish horse still very much in demand. Only recently I took a trip to Beijing where the Chinese are starting to get involved in show jumping, and they're very enthusiastic. And the Irish horse is known for his big heart and his bravery, and that would suit very much beginner riders like China. So we're always looking to other markets and to new markets in which to develop.
So Pippa, okay, your baby's only 14 weeks inside you at the moment, but yeah. When the baby's born, would you be sending it down young to Cian? To get up on a horse?
Only if it's a hardy little boy. I definitely wouldn't send a little girl down there. She wouldn't be able for it.
That should be handy, clean out a few stables.
But you're going to stay modelling. I mean, there's probably lots of work as well when you're pregnant as a model.
Hopefully I can keep going until I have a sizeable bump, and then hopefully move into maternity modelling. And there's a few companies already that have asked me, and I've been asked to do a few more things after Celebrity Bonnish Door. So I suppose it's just sizing everything up and seeing what's suitable. But at the moment, my focus is just on next April having our baby, please God.
The thing is, Cian, you have that medal beside you, which is great. You run this very successful horse business. But do you accept that maybe for a whole load of people in Ireland, they'll still always say, Cian O'Connor, Athens, they'll think cheating, they don't trust you?
Perhaps some people might take that view, but I've never, I suppose, avoided the question in any way. And I'm happy to openly discuss it. I mean, in the interviews following my medal win in London, and it was interesting. Only last week I was invited to my former alma mater, Belvedere College, to speak to the pupils, which was really nice because I hadn't been there since I finished school 14 years ago. And I spoke to the boys about, I suppose, the ups and downs that life throws all of us, whether it's sport or professional or family and so on. And I think that, you know, we can all find the light at the end of the tunnel and work through it. And I would actually believe that the majority of people, especially given the climate that we live in, would like a comeback kid and would like a winner.
And is that what you spoke to the boys about?
Something like that. Yeah, I think about the importance of being able to dig deep and to whether it's in sport or whether it's in life, we're all going to have a knock or two, some more than others. And it's to be able to not give up when that happens, and to be able to say, OK, we have to work through this. And as I said, to be able to find the light at the end of the tunnel. I think that capacity is in all of us.
Where do you think you got that resilience from?
I don't know, maybe some of it's inherent and some of it's been, you know, in this world, and you have to fend for yourself as well. Some people deal with things in different ways, and as a result of some of the things that have happened in my life, perhaps I'm stronger and maybe a better person for it.
Do you think he's changed over the years, or is he still the same little brother, big brother?
He's still the same. And you were talking earlier about what it takes to jump over a big pre-sance wall. My mum and dad have both told me at different times, that Cian, from a very young age, about one, used to like throw himself out of the cot. He'd have absolutely no fear. There was a story of him standing at the top of the stairs one night. My dad told him to get into bed and he said, if you don't let me get down, I'll throw myself down these stairs. He threw himself down the stairs. He used to...
Can we quite exaggerate?
No, that is true. Yeah. He used to have me on the back of his bicycle when we used to live in Nace, and he'd cycle down a hill and I'd fall off the bike because he'd be going way too fast and I'd be crying and he'd say, stop it, cop on, pull yourself together and get back up. So he was definitely, I think, born with it. He just has that type of personality, a daredevil and a go-getter.
Well, look, that's a really nice tribute to your brother, Pippa. And we're going to end on that. But also, you've got a piece of music you love, the When You've Got a Good Thing.
Yes, When You Got a Good Thing by Lady Antebellum. It was actually myself and Brian's, our wedding song. Brian's best man, Mickey Hart, sung it with his two sisters. So it's very special to us, and thought it was appropriate for Cian as well because he only got married very recently. Well,
it's Rue's favourite song as well. We were actually upset that you used it.
Are you serious?
She wanted to use it. She loves it.
Oh, really? Yeah. And it's not very well known, but it's a really nice song and the words are lovely.
So we'll dedicate it to you and Brian and to you and Ruth, since you all love it.
Cool.
Cian O'Connor, Pip O'Connor, thank you so much for coming in this morning. Best of luck with everything you both do and congratulations on your medal. My thanks on sound today to Ruth Kennington, to my producer Eileen Herron. I'll be here at the same time next Sunday. Until then, thank you very much for going out to listen to this.
Miriam Meets on RTE Radio 1. Listen back or podcast at rte.ie/radioplayer.